CTS Productions.
Clearing the static.
And welcome into Clearing the Static. It is the radio show that talks about radio. I'm Jake Longwell. The Radio Kid is here, as per usual, and we welcome you to program number 1842.
Yes, 1842 is on its way, and we're going to break from our traditional talk of station call letters and formats and things like that, because there are some very important things that are happening in the world of radio, and we will get to them. They'll probably take up most of the program, so let's rock and roll.
All right, here we go. Just as soon as Windows Media Player opens, there we go.
So we have a lot of important developments up on our plate here, and this first one, as well as several others that we will be discussing, talk about and revolve around AM radio. This coming out issued the week of October 7th. This in several trade reports, although I am working with the version that comes from Radio Insight here, that the FCC has proposed a rulemaking for changes to the protected contours of AM stations. The agency states the first group of proposals are proposed to, let me see if I can get this right here, designed to preserve some of the Class A AM's wide coverage areas while relieving more local stations of their current obligation to protect Class A stations from interference, with the goal to allow smaller stations to better cover their communities at night. The new proposal states that in daytime hours, Class A AMs are protected up to their 0.5 MV daytime ground wave contour from both co-channel and first adjacent channel stations. The FCC is also seeking comment on a pair of proposals for both critical hours and nighttime protection. The first critical hour proposal says that Class A's are afforded no protection from other AM stations, while the second keeps the same 0.5 MVU ground wave contour as the daytime proposal. For nighttime protection, option 1 says there may be no overlap between a Class A AM station's 0.5 MVU nighttime ground wave contour and any ground wave interference. Zero point zero two meter ten percent sky wave contour calculated using the single station method, while the second offers Class A AM stations are protected from other AM stations in the same manner as Class B AM stations are protected. That is, interference may not be increased above the greater of the 0.5 MV nighttime ground wave contour or the 50% exclusion RSS level calculated using the multiple station method. The FCC still intends to change Class B, C, and D stations to return to the pre-1991 0 dBd daytime, one protection ratio for first adjacent channels. Change the protection for second adjacent ground wave protections to match the current levels for third adjacent channel protection, and eliminate third adjacent ground wave protection, while changing the daytime ground wave protection to the 2.0 meter MVM contour. Now, okay, this has not yet to be adopted. This is one of those proposals for rulemaking that the FCC is looking at. And there's quite a bit of comment on this. And before I hand things over to Mr. Longwell, I'm sure this is something that we'll be debating, I want to point out that there is already a lot of comment from the engineering community and from the Disaster Emergency Preparedness Society, which itself is not in favor of eliminating any skyway protections. Neither is Major League Baseball. And but a lot of engineering groups and groups who represent these smaller stations are definitely for it. Now, Scott Fibush at his Fibush.com has a very interesting podcast and editorial explaining why this is a good and why this is a bad idea. First of all, you know, nobody other than DXers, I mean, nobody really listens to AM Skywave anymore. You know, nobody, the argument out there is nobody really cares. However, as Scott Fibush pointed out in his podcast, believe it or not, there are still some areas of the Midwest and Deep South which are extremely rural. He said, for example, you go to Wyoming, there are some places in Wyoming where you don't have a reliable local station. Another state he mentioned was Montana. And a lot of the, if you increase, if you take away first adjacent protections, if you take away, well, any protections for these clear channel, meaning Class A stations, you increase the noise floor. And people who may depend on these long distance catches because they don't have local service of their own, well, they're going to have a harder time hearing it. There are other arguments for and against, which, again, Scott does an excellent job in laying this out. I cannot do even the remote amount of justice that he can do to it. I'm sure now that we'll have a lot to say as we both kind of discuss the pros and cons to this. And we'll go ahead and we'll do that right now as I hand things over to Jake.
Right. Well, yes, this is an interesting idea. And honestly, I'm for it, and I'll tell you why. This is not 1934 anymore. The original purpose of the daytimer, licensing daytimers and protecting 50,000-watt AM stations from major cities like New York, like Chicago, like St. Louis, Cleveland, Los Angeles, and the like, it was because in 1934, a lot of the country still did not have local radio service, especially at night. Now, I totally respect what Mr. Fibush is saying, that indeed there are still some very rural areas of the country, but even if they don't have local AM radio service, I am sure most of those areas do have local FM radio service. And as far as someone in Wyoming relying on a station, say, from Chicago or St. Louis or Cleveland or out that far, they might even be getting some of the 50 kilowatts from California, somebody relying on those stations for important emergency information at night, I highly doubt that. I highly doubt that very much. Look, folks, there's a lot of talk about preserving AM radio, and I am all for that. I would like to see it preserved. I don't want to see it die. I really don't. I still feel that eventually it's going to, with the track that we seem to be on. But if there can be steps taken to preserve AM radio and actually get more people to listen to AM radio, and if that means giving these daytimers night power or giving these stations that have flea power at night the option to run full power, or at least the option to run a decent enough amount of juice to cover their city of license and you know, cover an area that's comparable to their daytime coverage area. I'm sorry, I know that the purists and the DXers and the "this is the way it's always been done" crowd will hate me for this, but that needs to change. The way that we consume media is changing. The way that we listen to radio is changing. This isn't 1934 anymore, folks. We need, if we're going to preserve radio, if we're going to preserve AM radio, I'm sorry, I respect heritage, I respect the way things have always been done. And yeah, I know I say that kind of sneeringly, but you know, in some cases, I think people want to preserve the way things have always been done simply because this is the way things have always been done, and they don't like change. Well, change is inevitable, and if we're going to preserve this industry, if we're going to preserve AM radio, we may need to make some changes, and that may mean, I'm sorry, getting rid of the magic of DXing. And that's because, let's face it, most people don't listen to Skywave anymore, and most of the AM stations that you can hear on Skywave, you can bring up on the internet, and most of them aren't even doing unique programming for a national audience. They're doing programming for their own communities, and in most cases, it's coast-to-coast AM on just about every other 50-kilowatt station between midnight and 5 a.m. So there's nothing unique about it anymore. There's nothing really there. I mean, there are a few exceptions. My good friend here in upstate New York is a diehard classic country fan. He loves WSM, and if he can get it on AM radio in his apartment here in upstate New York at night, he'll listen. But even he listens online now, and he can listen online 24/7 to WSM. And he doesn't have to put up with the fading and the interference. He can hear the music he loves and the personalities that he loves and enjoy them in stereo, of all things. So, I get it. I get it. I grew up DXing AM radio. One of the things that turned me on to radio was asking the question, how come I can hear all these faraway stations at night, and why does my local AM station have to go off the air at sunset? Those are questions I started asking that really got me into the industry. I respect that. I respect people wanting to preserve things because it's the way it's always been done and heritage. But we're talking survival here. We're talking industry survival. And when it comes down to heritage versus survival, I'm sorry, folks, I'll take survival.
Okay, that's a fair enough assessment. The point that you bring up about, and Scott Feibusch even raised this point that, most of your clear, quote unquote, clear channel AM stations, I mean, most of them are just running national programming to begin with. There's hardly anything unique about it, which, okay, you know, that from a programming standpoint, I can see that. But then another point that he brought up is, you know, what's the difference? Because if most AM stations these days anyway are running talk programming, syndicated programming, you're going to get, if we give some of these stations night power, instead of getting coast to coast from, let me just pick a station here, WTIC, you're going to get coast to coast from whatever it's on 1080, possibly, you know, the local station that is allowed to be given night power. And it's definitely, in terms of programming, I think that the people who have an argument for allowing this to happen have a point. I mean, content wise there really isn't much saving unless you're a WCBS or a KNX.
And even then, okay, if I'm in somewhere like, say, Virginia or the Carolinas or somewhere further west of New York City, like maybe somewhere in Ohio or Indiana, and I can hear WCBS. How is the traffic and weather and news for New York City relevant to my community when I might have a daytimer on 880 in my community that could serve my needs and my interests at night? Why should I be subject to basically, you know, why should New York City be given priority over my community just because they're New York City? And because, you know, it's New York, so of course, you know, they're going to get priority. No, if my community has an AM daytimer that could serve the community at night with quality programming that is actually relevant to me, I'm sorry, but I don't want to listen to the traffic and weather and news from New York City. I want to listen to content that I can relate to, which is another reason why I'm all for giving night power to these stations. A classic example that I've brought up several times, and I'll bring it up another time, one more time here. WCJW in Warsaw, the only commercial AM station serving Wyoming County, and they also serve other counties adjacent that have other local radio stations like Livingston and Genesee and Allegheny, but they are the only local commercial radio voice in Wyoming County. They have to go off the air at night. Now, granted, they have translators now. They have a network of translators. But prior to having these translators, they had to go off the air at night. Well, they still do on AM. They have to go off the air at night for WRVA in Richmond, Virginia, almost 400 miles away. How is WRVA's programming, which is geared toward Richmond, relevant to the people of Wyoming County, New York? I mean, unless you're a transplant from Virginia, which most people in Wyoming County probably are not.
Right.
Whereas WCJW could, maybe if they were allowed to have night power, they wouldn't have had to apply for all these translators. And see, this is another reason why. If we had done this sooner, we might not have so many AM stations trying to get FM translators because they would have been completely content with their AM facilities because they'd be able to serve their community 24/7, because again, most people in Wyoming County do not care about what's going on in Richmond, Virginia. Likewise, I know many years ago when I was listening to the old Spectrum radio program on shortwave, they were interviewing the general manager of WJDM in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Now, at the time, WJDM was breaking ground because they signed on the first AM station in the country to sign on their expanded band signal on 1660. And they had a really nice interview with the GM of WJDM at the time. And he explained why they applied for an expanded band signal, because they're a daytimer on 1530. And one of the first things he said was, nobody in Elizabeth, New Jersey cares about WCKY. Nobody in Elizabeth, New Jersey cares about what's going on in Cincinnati. We're constantly being asked, why do you guys have to go off the air at night for this station in Cincinnati that we don't listen to, that we don't care about? So people do, at least back then, maybe not so much now because this was almost 25 years ago, but certainly back then people did care. People were complaining. You know, why do our local stations have to go off the air so that we can listen to these big city stations that we don't give a damn about? So, you know, people do notice, and whether we like it or not, we live in a 24/7 universe. We live in an environment where if you have a media outlet, you are expected to be available and accessible to the consumer 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The concept of a station that only works when the sun is out, it is not relevant to, especially to newer generations, but even to older generations. A daytimer has always been a challenge. I mean, there's always been challenges, but nowadays it's even more challenging. And as I've said, we're talking survival here. We're talking survival, which is why we need to let this happen. I say, let it happen. I'm sorry, DXers. I'm sorry, you know. if anything else, for what it's worth, you'd have more of a challenge because now you can see what stations you can pick out of the noise floor. And as far as Major League Baseball, well, honestly, MLB would rather you buy a subscription to their online streaming service anyway. And I suspect more and more people are doing that. Or eventually it's going to get to a point where the radio stations are going to start demanding that they can stream the games. And honestly, if you really want to find a free stream of the MLB team of your choice, you can. There are pirated streams out there.
You can.
Yes,
you can.
Absolutely. I've done it.
Eventually, especially if this goes through, these stations are going to have to demand. Because there are some baseball fans that are, I'm sorry, that are not going to pay.
Then they're. You could argue they're not real fans.
No, they're not real fans. But they like the magic of listening to. You know, I know people who love the magic of listening to 660 in New York on AM radio without the hi-fi stereo. Of the web, they love the magic of hearing the game through Skywave.
And that's fine. But what if you have a? If you're 300 miles away and the game is a day game, you can't hear it.
Right. Well, yeah, that's where things go really, really, that's kind of where the logic stops in that.
Right, because, yes, indeed, a lot of the games are night games, but they have several day games. The Yankees have several games that start at 1:05, 4:05. Yep. And in the middle of summer, you're not going to get any Skywave during those hours.
Oh, no.
So, no, trust me. I get it, folks. All those people that are listening to this and screaming, you know, no, we have to preserve it.
And I am one of those people. I
know, but are you, let me ask you this. Are you one of those people simply because this is the way it's always been done? Or do you honestly feel there is a legitimate reason or cause to preserve things the way they are?
Both.
Okay.
I am of the sense, first of all, yes, this is the way it's always been done. You know, this is like the equivalent of, you know, let's euthanize grandma. You know, this is, let's.
Okay. But that argument, nobody lives forever.
True. Okay. Nobody lives forever, but, yeah, you don't go and purposely end of life someone either, and you know to do this to the AM band, I am of the opinion that this, or at least some of this, some of that magic, should be preserved. So yes, I do feel from a sense. In a sense that, yes, this is the way it's always been done, and we need to make at least some concerted effort to try to preserve some of that. But I also think there is a practical reason. You know, I've heard that the people on this side, you know, talk about, well, if these stations were allowed to have power at night, they'd serve their local communities. And, you know, Scott Feibusch brought up a good point, and I think it bears noting, especially in DXing the AM band and looking at schedules of things on adjacent or on not co-channel frequencies. You know, Scott makes a pretty good point here. Most of AM radio, for the most part now, is full of syndicated programming. And especially your small town AM stations, a lot of them have gone to, you know, news talk programming or some kind of syndicated programming at night. Even if something were to happen, a lot of them right now don't have people there at the station like, oh, something's happening. Let's serve our local community. Because a lot of these news talk stations have become talk stations, especially at night, where in the smaller towns, you know, they don't have the news crew available. Even though they've gotten these FM translators, or these big mighty FM translators, they're not, you know, they don't necessarily, they're not providing, you know, around the clock local service to their communities. So in a way, that this whole notion that a community would be better served, is in a way, it's a farce. What's going to happen is, instead of getting Michael Savage from WHAM in Rochester, okay, you'll be getting it from the 1180 in Springfield, or the 1180 in Philadelphia, which, by the way, at night, both are running all syndicated lineups.
Right, but the potential is there for local service to exist.
The potential, yes, okay.
If these stations are given night power.
Right, the potential is there, but...
And I'm also thinking of other examples, like, for example, you brought up 1080, and my first thought was WUFO in Buffalo.
Right, right.
They are still a daytimer. To my knowledge, they do not have a translator yet.
They do.
Oh, they do?
They do.
What frequency?
It's 96.5. It's the one that they Family Life basically donated that translator to them.
Okay.
I mean, if this is going to okay, here's what I think should happen.
Well, let me just say, if WUFO had been given night power instead of having to protect WTIC, which is not relevant, whose programming is not relevant at all to the African American community in Buffalo.
Right.
WUFO could have had an edge over, or would have had a more fair advantage to compete with WBLK years ago. I still remember reading on Radio Discussions many years ago, back in the, I guess, the 60s and 70s, WBLK used to love to slam WUFO because WBLK was on FM and, of course, could serve the African-American community 24/7. They used to slam WUFO by saying, "We don't run down at sundown."
Interesting.
But can you see where WUFO has been at an unfair advantage all these years?
I can see that. In a sense, I can see that. But I also think that, you know, a daytimer, look, there are ways to promote daytimers and make them work. And this idea that we need to completely kill off the daytimer so that we can somehow satisfy this societal norm to be a 24/7 operation is, I don't think people who have that argument really truly understand what we are about to kill off in the process of doing that.
Okay, but tell me something. How is the programming of WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut relevant to Buffalo, New York in general, let alone relevant to the African American community in Buffalo? How is that programming relevant to them when compared to the local programming of WUFO?
That's WUFO. WUFO is definitely an exception to most of these arguments. In all honesty, yes, the programming of Power 96.5 is more relevant, but you know what? If you want to stay on all day and all night, you've got a translator now to do that with.
Okay, but before you were opposed to these translators. Now,
I am opposed to these translators, but now these operators are trying to have both. They want more night power.
But how do you know that necessarily if more night power is given? And okay, maybe I'm just being optimistic here. maybe some stations would actually relinquish their translators if more people were listening to the AM frequency.
You know, I would like to believe that that would happen. And maybe just me being the skeptic that I am, I'm not convinced that will happen because, you know, operators like to be on FM.
Of course.
There is at least that, you know, there's the superiority in stereo sound quality and, you know, the FM seems to be in most operators' minds the more accessible option. I'm not going to say that you won't see AM operators giving up their translators. I can't know that. I can't predict that. But I doubt that most would do that.
And you're probably right. And getting back to WUFO, you're right. If they have the translator, well, of course, some would argue if they have the translator, why do they even need the AM at all? And maybe
right.
maybe another solution is one that, again, we've talked about. It's been bandied about on the program, thinning the herd, getting rid of, like, if you have a translator, getting rid of your AM license.
Right.
The translator to become Class A FM.
Look, if we're going to do this, if we're going to stop protecting these AM stations, and let me just go on record, it is definitely a proposal that I am 100% against. But if we are going to do that, okay, then what needs to happen is operators need to pick one. Either you increase your night power and you give up your translator, or you can keep your translator and remain a daytimer or turn in your AM station.
Well, see, and I think that would be a fair proposal because many of them would probably be in favor of turning off the AM facility, you're eliminating a lot of the problem right there.
Right.
You're eliminating a lot of the problem right there. It's an interesting proposal. I predict that it's going to go through. I do.
It is.
And I think in the end, I hope maybe you and others who feel as you do will see the benefits of this in the long term. But only time will tell, as they say.
Exactly.
Only time will tell. Your thoughts, of course, are always welcome. clearingthestaticradio@gmail.com is the address for that.
We have an update now of something that came out several weeks ago, as a matter of fact. We just hadn't gotten to it. And I think the appropriate time is now. We have an update to a story that we've been talking about. KVSL in Sholo, Arizona. You'll remember they asked the FCC to be able to turn off their AM signal and to be able to operate with just their translator on an experimental basis. Well, the radio station there, KVSL, it did apply for an STA on September 13th to take the station off the air while continuing to operate their translator under experimental authority, and it was quickly denied by the FCC within a week that the application was shot down by the FCC, stating, quote, CAS's request fails to explain how this experiment will aid in the development of new technology, equipment, systems, or services. Furthermore, CASA fails to explain why the information it intends to collect about listeners and sponsors cannot be obtained while it continues to operate KVSL AM. Absent additional empirical or theoretical evidence. These guys use big words when they write, folks. Warranting testing, CASA has not sufficiently justified the grant of experimental authority. We also find the request to be facial inconsistent with our FM translator rules. More significantly, the request is completely at odds with the intent of the Commission's ongoing AEM revitalization proceedings. Throughout the AEM revitalization proceeding, the Commission has consistently pursued proposed rule changes and other procedures with the goal of enabling AEM stations to improve their service and provide better service to the public. The Commission has not yet contemplated allowing AM stations to surrender their AM licenses and use only their translators, as CASA suggests. So, big blow to CASA here. Big blow to CASA here, but, I don't think this is going to be the last we're going to see of something like this. But the results on this are definitely quite surprising. Your thoughts, Jake?
My thought is, wow. Just wow.
Yeah, I know.
Because I thought for sure this was going to be approved.
I did too. I definitely did too.
So how do you feel about this? I mean, what do you think about the FCC's ruling here?
You know, it takes guts. That honestly took guts. The problem here is now we are at odds because this does indeed go against the AM revitalization project because the translator is supposed to relay the AM station. So, okay, I can see that. But at some point, we're going to have to make it, you know, this comes back around full circle to the discussion we were just having. At some point, we've got spectrum cramming here on both the AM and FM bands. AM owners are screaming, oh my God, we need relief, we need relief. But the FM spectrum is becoming so full right now because everybody and their cousin and their brother want a translator that we are in a situation where we have a flood of issues that are building up in a big dam. And you know what's going to happen, folks? That dam is going to break. And something is going to have to give here. And even though it's quite gutsy, well, even this whole thing has been quite gutsy, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of this. I think somebody else is going to try this very thing a little while down the road. And eventually, we're going to get to such a crowding point that the FCC is either going to have to say yes, or we are going to have to start thinning the herd. Because on AM, because look, we've got all kinds of problems here, and this really does nothing to revitalize AM. And I'm beginning to become of the opinion that, you know, the sooner we realize that, and the sooner we can make a crucial decision, do we either A, fix AM, or do we pile on FM translators and then eventually address the FM spectrum crisis. We have to make that choice. And while the FCC's decision was quite gutsy and quite bold in preserving right now the status quo, eventually the FCC is going to have to rule on this. And I'm not sure that kicking the can down the road was the smartest or wisest option here.
No. You're right. It probably wasn't. Honestly, I would have granted the experiment, and I'll tell you why. Because then we'd be able to see some concrete results here. I think that CASA would have been able to conduct some legitimate tests, getting some legitimate feedback, and if they could have gone back to the FCC with the evidence that, hey, nobody's listening on 1470. Everyone's listening on our translator now. There's no one listening to the AM. There's no point in keeping the AM on the air. I think that would have been a very important survey to conduct. And I'm kind of sorry that they're not going to be given the chance now anyway to conduct that survey, because I think it would have given us a benchmark from which to proceed.
It really would have, because I've checked. KVSL is not streaming.
Okay.
So they can't inflate the numbers like Disney did.
Right.
Okay. And that's, you know, I think from CASA, we would get a complete picture of who's really listening to this FM, you know, if that AM is off the air temporarily. I think you're right. And then, you know, what becomes of that, obviously the commission would have to rule on that. But listen, the FCC is making more and more and more of a mess of this whole thing, this whole AM revitalization process. You know, the more they try to do with it, the more they mess it up.
Well, you know, the saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
I don't know if we're at that point yet, but no, it's definitely, there are a lot of issues that seem to be popping up as a result of all of this. But again, it's about survival, and we need to do what we can to keep as many of these stations on the air as we can, because we need more choices, not fewer. We don't need mass extinction of radio stations, you know, radio stations going dark. We're already seeing stations going dark, mostly AM. It seems that keeps happening more and more. And so, like I've said from the beginning of this program, or this episode, this is about survival. Wouldn't you say? I mean, we're talking survival at this point.
Right, right. We are. I don't think we're going about our survival the right way.
Perhaps not.
I don't, because the survival, it's not even about the survival of this industry. I look at this and it, you know what this is? This is pretty much anything. I feel like this is anything that the big radio guys may want. Is what this is all about. So the big, you know, the your iHearts and your at the time CBS Radio, Entercom, these were actually the guys who at first were, you know, wrote into the FCC and said, hey, we want translators. Now, they were pretty upset when the C and D stations got a majority of these translators.
But but in my case, in my opinion, those were the stations that deserved the most.
That deserved it, that needed it. But I think none of this is really being done for radio survival or AM's survival, AM revitalization. I mean, I've said this before. How is, you know, putting on a translator and then like having it rebroadcast your AM, that's not revitalizing your AM station. That's not increasing listenership to your AM station. It's getting people to listen to your 96.5 or 102.1 or 96.1 or 93.5 or whatever.
But that translator is still tied to that station. Ergo, the argument being, and I'm not saying I'm for or against this argument, the argument being that translator is tied to your station. Therefore, that is helping the station.
Right.
I think what we need to be more clear on here is we're talking about helping the station versus helping the band.
Right. But then, okay, but then let's not call it AM revitalization.
Okay.
Then let's call it station revitalization or something.
Right.
Because that's what this really is. Let's speak plainly here.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Okay.
I would agree with that, yes.
What really needs to happen, I'm going to tell you what really needs to happen is these FM trans, basically the FCC should just say to everyone tomorrow, you know what? You want to be on FM. Here's the FM. Now, turn in your daytimer. Well, don't turn them in. Your daytimers, your daytime stations, but all this stuff that you don't want, because it's too expensive to fix the ground systems, or it's too expensive to do this, and you feel nobody's listening anymore, and you did it. All right, these stations now go to radio hobbyists and community groups.
Yeah, and we've proposed that on the program before. I would be all for that.
That is what should be happening here.
I would be 100% all for that. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because then the FM station will be parted from its the FM translator will be parted from the AM station. If what they did, they said, okay, we're going to donate 1470. We're going to lease it out to, I don't know, I'm just going to come up with a name, Sholo Community Radio for a year.
Right.
And we're going to get permission to operate on our translator. Okay, people will only be listening to your FM translator for that year in time. So you'll still be conducting that same experiment.
Yes. And meanwhile, you'd be able to create a whole new station on AM, which could provide programming that you're not going to care about because your company's not going to care about because the programming won't make money. It's
right.
It's going to be a nonprofit, volunteer-powered radio.
Right.
I would be 100% in favor of that. As I've said on the program before, If commercial radio does not want the AM band, I would be all in favor of turning it over to hobbyists and community groups. And I still hold out hope that something like that could happen one day. Sometime if we have time, I would like to talk about a unique proposal that you know what I'm talking about, that Michelle Bradley recently proposed to the FCC.
Yes.
For creating spectrum for community radio. So I'm all in favor of something like that happening. I am all in favor of having more choice. Like anyone who listens to this program knows, or anyone who knows me knows that I am in favor of consumers' choice, freedom of choice, and having more diversity and more listening options and more outlets to pick from when it comes to choosing your content.
Absolutely.
So
I think we've got time to get to one more big topic, so let's go ahead and roll that.
Will do.
We're going to move now to something that came out last week and was very controversial. Not surprising. So here's what's going on. MS Communications, will dramatically reduce and fold Next Radio and Tag Station operations. After launching with much of the bravado for the radio industry, MS Communications intends to dramatically reduce and then fold the operations of its Next Radio and Tag Station businesses. Next Radio was launched with the purpose of bringing FM tuners to mobile devices. While it was successful on getting the app on many devices, there was one major holdout, which was Apple, and that made it impossible to get the momentum needed for the app to gain critical mass. Or was it simply the lack of demand for FM on a phone? As the two biggest radio operators in iHeartMedia and Entercom proceeded with building their own streaming platforms in iHeartRadio and Radio.com, respectively. it showed that the future was in getting radio into a proper streaming platform and not just making FM available on a device. TagStation is the underlying cloud product that allows stations to synchronize their broadcasts with images, interactive touchpoints, and other related data for displaying the next radio app, HD radio, and connective car dashboards while introducing analytics. Okay. All right, screen reader. Around it. In its quarterly earnings report, CEO Jeff Smulyan stated that Emmis had been working to create a consortium of radio operators to own the next radio and tag station business, using their collected scale and resources to build an attribution platform for the radio industry that would have provided the common language and measurement that radio advertisers are demanding, but it appeared to be unsuccessful. Due to the losses incurred, Emmis is unwilling and unable to continue funding the next radio and tag station businesses, and they are currently structured. We plan to dramatically reduce the operations of these businesses and explore other means of eliminating the operating losses from these businesses in the coming months. Smulyan added later in the conference call that while other operators were willing to support the platform through words, they were not willing to support it with dollars, and that the operation will be winding down completely. So what does this mean? Well, let's talk about something for a minute. One of the things that Jake has been saying more than I is that people are listening to radio through their phone. And which is true, they are. But that it was because of this FM chip. This FM chip and this, the in part, the next radio app were enabling this, were helping to make this to occur. I think through that, that provided some benefit. But it sounds very much like the broadcasters more or less are trying to sink their dollars into streaming media. And that can be taken as a good or bad thing. What it sounds like to me is that Emmis had the goal of just bringing radio to people, FM radio, without having the need to use data plans for streaming, which on most phones, I'm sorry for the phone purists, but yes, you still need to purchase a data plan, and most data plans have a cap. And if they don't have a cap, if you purchase the unlimited data, once you get past a certain data point, your data slows down. So this was helpful, I think, in at least bringing FM radio to the masses. But it sounds like the people, the phone makers, and even the broadcasters, to some extent, really didn't want this. And we can discuss this further, but right now I'd like to bring this to Jake, and we'll get his thoughts on this. Jake?
Well, I have to agree with you. It definitely sounds like the intentions were good, but the interest just wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do. I think some of the reason that we saw the some of the translators on FM and some of these FM translators that stick with the talk format is because of the growing of these FM chips were growing on these phones, and you know, this was enabled by the next radio app. you know, so that's, I mean, I think it did have, it did have some benefit. And I think we did see that. I mean, I remember hearing ads, you know, oh, listen, there's an FM chip in your phone and get this app. And it's, and you don't even have to use data and it's great. And it, like, I remember hearing some of those ads on, especially on more local radio stations. And I don't know. I really don't know what to say about this. I guess people, in a sense, not as many people were listening to it as maybe we thought. And maybe, too, I think, you know, the broadcasters, your big broadcasters, iHeart, Entercom, they wanted to be able to monetize their own streaming platform.
Oh, of course.
Rather than share something with all the other broadcasters. And trust me, there's nothing wrong with radio.com or iHeartRadio, but I think now we have, something that I still go back to like a hawk is, what is going to happen now? Everything's fine in the streaming world now, but if there was an emergency, all anybody would have to do with this next radio is just pull up their, you know, the app would be there on their phone, and you wouldn't be connecting to the internet. It wouldn't be using a data thing, so you'd still be able to get that in emergencies. And that is my main concern.
And I agree with that concern. I don't think it's a good idea to get rid of this app. I don't. And I hope...
I don't think so either.
I hope that somebody will develop, I'm sure, and I am ignorant in terms of how easy it is to develop new apps for phones, me not having a cell phone and not really understanding how the technology works. But assuming that those who do understand the technology far better than I could develop a new app that maybe isn't necessarily sponsored by the broadcasters, but maybe sponsored by FEMA or the Red Cross or other emergency and disaster relief companies, organizations.
Yeah.
Because I do. I think that something like this is critical in terms of an emergency.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I agree with you, the internet infrastructure still is very vulnerable during times of natural disaster. Now, I think eventually that will change. I don't know when that will change, but it will change. I think the first thing that needs to be looked at is taking the cables off of the telephone poles above ground and putting them underground, which some would argue, well, that has its own risks, especially in earthquake-prone areas. But certainly I think that the infrastructure would be more sound during most disasters if that were the case. But be that as it may, I do think it is important to keep the app or keep the ability to tune terrestrial radio on one's phone. That is important, and I'm sorry that this did not take off as well as most had hoped. But that's life in the big city, as they say. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of CTS. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Do tune in again next week for more discussion of radio. For the Radio Kid, I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.
CTS Productions, clearing the static to bring you great radio.